Hey, what's going on, fellow nature lovers? And welcome back to yet another episode of the Amateur Naturalist Podcast, where if you've listened to our podcast before, you already know that we enjoy discussing nature, sometimes about animals, sometimes we discuss plants, and sometimes we just like to talk about concepts about nature, or even what's found out there in our beautiful, beautiful world. Hey folks, this is Tommy, and I am your audio digital host of the Amateur Naturalist Podcast. Hey folks, believe it or not, we are now into season number 3 of the Amateur Naturalist Podcast, and today is episode number 47. And on today's episode, I'm going to do a shortened version, a little shortened podcast today, which is actually going to be part number 2 for discussing Crotalus horridus, otherwise known as the timber rattlesnake. Hey, I just felt like we needed a little bit more, a little short episode just to finish covering this wonderful snake, Crotalus horridus, the timber rattlesnake. Well, welcome back, folks. And you know, our little podcast here, the Amateur Naturalist Podcast, folks, it's now listened to worldwide, all around the world, in all 50 United States states, in 107 countries, and in an absolutely amazing 2,395 cities around the world. Whoo, that blows my mind. Can't believe it. I'm very humbled by that. And it's I'm proud of it, but I never thought that would happen. For some reason, I have now been totally stuck on 107 countries for 6 months now. Can't get that number 108. But the podcast is now very close to reaching 2,500 cities around the world, and we might just hit that 2,500 international cities in the next 2 weeks. Hey folks, you know, I just want to throw a few thank yous out there. Wanted to say thank you to our newest listeners in some different cities, like how about Lancaster, South Carolina? Just picked up some listeners there. And Clearwater Beach, Florida. I'd love to be down there right now. Hamilton, Ontario. Ewing, Kentucky. Joplin, Missouri. And now in Charlottetown, Prince Edward Island, where we just picked up some brand new listeners in just the last 2 weeks. Hey, thank you, folks. Thank you to all of our wonderful listeners. And now on to this week's episode. So hello, everyone, and welcome back to episode number 47, number 47 of the Amateur Naturalist Podcast. And, you know, where we delve into the fascinating world of wildlife and natural ecosystems with each and every podcast episode. So what's going on today, folks? Well, I am your audio digital host, and I think I have a good one for you today, folks. Today, we're going to discuss Crotalus horridus for the second podcast in the row, part number 2, if you'll please. You know, it's part number 2 of the timber rattlesnake, a pretty fascinating snake, scares a lot of us. Just that name alone, Crotalus horridus, pretty scary name, and it's can sometimes be a pretty scary snake, but it's got its reason for being here, and we're going to talk about some of that today and maybe a couple of stories to go along with that. You know, I talked about how Crotalus horridus refers to the bandit rattlesnake, and it also refers to the canebrake rattlesnake, which a lot of folks used to think of as a separate species, but it also is commonly known as the timber rattlesnake. Now, I did not get much chance last time to cover a few things, and I do want to cover some few of those things on today's part 2 episode. In trying to cut down the time a little bit the last episode, I kind of felt like I cut the information that I really wanted to cover quite a bit down. So we'll take a few minutes tonight and cover a few more items on Crotalus horridus. So we already covered like a few very important things, but I didn't discuss much about the actual bite. the actual bite or the envenomation of the timber rattlesnake on the last episode. So, you know, like I said, we call this bite of a rattlesnake or any of the venomous snakes an actual envenomation. So the bites are kind of rare, but they do happen, and they are considered a medical emergency. You got to take it seriously. There are times you will get bit and get a full dose, a full envenomation, but there are times you'll get what they call a dry bite. But you don't know, so you got to be careful, and you got to make sure you always consider it a medical emergency. Now, let's say that you're out hiking and you're way away from a population. So you're out there on the trail and the worst case happens. Here you are, a mile or several miles from your vehicle, and you get just too close to a rattlesnake and it bites your leg. And, you know, I think about this. You know, I go into the Smoky Mountains and we go on some long hikes. And, you know, just here in a couple of weeks, we will be hiking back up to the top of Mount LeConte, third highest mountain peak in the Great Smoky Mountains. And some of those trails are, you know, 10 miles long, 8 miles long, 6.5 miles long. And the shortest going up to Mount LeConte is 5 miles up a very, maybe you'd call it a very rocky, very steep trail. And anywhere up through there, you could run into a timber rattlesnake, and folks do. And what would I do if I was bit 4 miles? 4 miles from the car on a very, very steep trail. And it's something to think about, but you got to remember and be calm. So let's talk about that. What actually could happen? So you get bit in the leg. So there is a chance you got a dry bite to where like no actual venom was actually injected into your body. But you never know, right? But you never want to take a chance when you get struck by a rattlesnake. This is a medical emergency and it should absolutely be treated as soon as possible. Now, just how long do you have? How long do you have? A lot of folks will ask that. And last week, I did have somebody write in and ask this exact question. And the question was, how long do you have after being bitten by a timber rattlesnake? So you should definitely seek help within half an hour. Now, folks, think about what I just said. Some of those trails I go on, or you might go on, the minimum shortest trail up to Mount LeConte is 5 miles. And if I'm 4 miles into that trail on a very, very steep trail, there's no way that I get medical help within a half an hour. So I would almost have to be helicopter out of there as a medical emergency, right? So you got to know where you're at, got to have the tools to be able to get those things to happen. Think about it when you go on your next long hike or you're out there fishing or wherever you're at. So you cannot be sure that that rattlesnake venom got actually into your body. But who wants to assume it's a dry bite? Because it's a medical emergency. So if you are at least 1 to 3 hours from your car, then you might need to just be evacuated. And I know, I'll be honest, last year on our actual hike, one of the members of our party, they came down one day after us and they descended the mountain the next day and they had an emergency and they didn't have to bring a helicopter in, but they did have to hit that SOS button and they had to have some EMS folks hike all the way up to them and then help carry the person all the way back down. So again, another medical emergency. You got to be careful. So I did want to talk a little bit about what you could use to help you in a situation like that. So if you're out there in the backcountry where there's no cell phone coverage, and where we go, there's no cell phone coverage at all, no electricity, sometimes it's probably very, very wise to carry some devices, maybe something like a Garmin inReach, something that'll give you satellite coverage, right? So these Garmin inReaches and items like them, these are small devices that kind of look like the size of a walkie-talkie. A lot of times they're bright orange, bright red. And these small devices, they hook up with a satellite. And many backcountry hikers and many backpackers and hunters and fishermen and campers, they have bought these devices. They can be pretty expensive. They can be somewhere, I think around $400, $500, or maybe even more. But what's more important, $500, $600, or something that could save your life. So again, we talked about it last time, and I just talked about a few minutes ago. One of our friends who hikes to the top of the mountain every single year, last year had to be rescued just a year ago this month, coming up, and the Garmin inReach communicated exactly where his GPS coordinate location was, and it got in contact with the EMS rescuers, and that's a great thing to happen. You know, it might have saved him. Who knows? Now, if you get bit by a rattlesnake, number one, this is very, very important, and it's hard to do, but you don't want to panic. You don't want to take off running. You don't want to say, you know, I'm 3 miles up this trail and I'm going to get down there to my car as quick as I can. You're going to cause your heart rate to escalate very high. You're going to get your breathing up really high. Your blood's going to be pumping hard, and that could be disastrous with that venom in you, right? So speeding up your heart rate after a snake bite can be fatal. So, gosh, it's a lot of things to think about again, right? Again, snake bites, they are on the rare side. Doesn't happen a lot, but when it happens, it's important you look at it as a medical emergency. They actually happen. So just be prepared. So one of these Garmin devices, what they do, they will help with two-way communication when you have zero phone coverage. If you're back in the mountains, that's going to happen. It will let your family know where you are at all times. That's very important. They'll know where you're at on the trails, where you're at on the mountain, where you're at on the water, all those kind of things. It will help you keep up to date with weather. Now, when you're on a mountain and that weather rolls in there, you better know it's coming, right? It can get quite dangerous up there. It can also trigger an interactive SOS message. Interactive meaning you can talk back and forth. But that SOS message goes out to a special response team. And that response team will now relay your emergency message if you need EMS or even a very, very expensive helicopter rescue, right? One last thing. This isn't a commercial about these devices, but one last thing. It will even keep track of where you are and how you got there, which can help prevent you from becoming lost. So it'll help you as well. Probably a very well $400 well spent. Now, again, I'm not sponsored by this company, so there are other companies out there that you could look up, but I will tell you that this device can have up to, oh, I don't know, I know it's over 300, but I've heard 330, 340 hours of battery life. So that's pretty good when you're out there on the trail, right? That's a really valuable thing. If you need help, it's right there hanging on your backpack. If you have no way to charge a cell phone, you don't have any cell phone coverage at all, it's nice to have that Garmin that's got over 300 hours of battery coverage. Now, that was our case when we got to the top of the mountain every year. No cell phone coverage, no way to charge your battery. Got to be ready. So no cell phone coverage and you have an emergency like a snake bite, it's a terrible combination. And we've talked about that, how last year that really helped us a lot. So don't forget, a timber rattlesnake bite is considered an absolute medical emergency, and you only have usually roughly 30 minutes to get to a hospital and get there very calmly without panicking. Now, even though I said that, it wouldn't take a lot to panic most people in this precarious situation, and I am sure that I would panic as well. But try to stay calm. Try to keep your heart rate low. Breathe. You know, monitor your heart rate. Don't run. Don't use a tourniquet. Did you hear what I said? A lot of folks think, I'm going to go buy a snake bite kit. And it's got a blade in there, right? And it's got the little part that's used as a suction. And what do they tell you these days? Don't use that. Don't be cutting on your leg. Don't be cutting on your arm. Don't be using a tourniquet and actually lose your leg or your arm. So, you know, you got to be careful. Read up on these things before you get out there and do your very best not to run or to panic. Now, if you get bit and it gets left untreated, it can then lead to organ failure and, of course, even death in just 2 or 3 days. The venom from the greater part of most rattlesnake bites will cause an absolute significant damage to your body tissues, and it will affect your circulatory system by actually destroying skin tissues. Oh, it can get really ugly, really bad. It can destroy blood cells, and even cause you to hemorrhage. And when you start hemorrhaging, you're losing a lot of blood, right? So you could be hemorrhaging internally as well, you know, through some of your organs. So pretty rough stuff. And I know I have seen folks, I can remember somebody that was bit by a rattlesnake years ago. Oh my gosh. And their thigh, it was began to swell. Their thigh began to get so big just a few days later, and it turned black and it turned blue, and it swelled so big that the skin couldn't take it anymore. And the skin began to like bust open and burst open. It gets really, really ugly. But, and that person survived, and that person was under treatment. So just imagine if you didn't get treatment. So again, I'm going to calm down a little bit. Got my heart rate up a little bit thinking about these rattlesnake bites. But after hearing this, I think that you will agree that this rattlesnake bite is really, 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 and I've said it 10 times, it's an absolute medical emergency. So I'm in the woods and I'm in the outdoors quite a bit, and used to be a whole lot more than I am now. But over the years, my mother has told me of a story, and she wanted me to know this story because one of her very, very best friends, it was her best friend in her entire life, was bitten at an early age by a timber rattlesnake when she was just a young girl. And this was my mother's very best friend, and she was with her dad. And she was with her dad on the family farm, and she did happen to step on a timber rattlesnake. And, you know, that's not a good thing. You don't want to be stepping on too many rattlesnakes, and I'm not making light of it, but usually that's gonna cause a bite. And so there she was out way out on this farm, and she got struck in her lower leg where most of these bites do occur. And her dad, loving dad, was very, very scared, worried about his daughter, and he panicked. And he panicked like most people would, but unfortunately, he took off running with her, and because of not being calm and because of running with his daughter, that rattlesnake venom got all through her body, and it did just massive, massive muscle and skin damage to her entire leg. So pretty bad stuff. And unfortunately, the outcome, you're probably going to guess, this young girl ended up having so much damage to her leg that they had to actually amputate her leg. So folks, we're back. And you know, last episode, I didn't get to talk about the rattlesnake as a predator, what it eats, but also I didn't get to talk about what eats the rattlesnake. So we will talk about that on this episode. So let's take just a few minutes right now and actually talk about what a timber rattlesnake eats out in the wild, or what it is a predator, what kind of prey it actually eats. So out in the wild, timber rattlesnakes predominantly eat small to medium-sized rodents. That's their main, you would have guessed it, right? I mean, they eat mice and rodents and all that kind of thing. So, you know, they eat a lot of medium-sized rodents such as mice and even shrews and chipmunks, of course, and squirrels. You know, a lot of these big timber rattlesnakes are pretty good size, and they're eating some rabbits and squirrels and things like that. But, you know, we don't always think about them eating birds, but they also eat birds and lizards, depending on where they're at in the country, and amphibians and other small animals that are, you know, small enough that they can swallow, right? But even though they eat mostly small rodents when they're young, as they get larger and larger, they can kill and eat squirrels and rabbits and other small-sized mammals. So, folks, I know that was quick. I very quickly talked about what a rattlesnake eats. So, how about, since I just briefly spoke about what the timber rattlesnake eats, let's touch on what actually eats or predates on the rattlesnake itself. So yeah, there are things that eat it, of course. So believe it or not, there are actually a few predators that will capture, they will kill, and they will eat a rattlesnake, and they'll eat a rattlesnake such as a timber rattlesnake. And some of these animals are like coyotes. Now, coyotes are pretty opportunistic feeders, and they eat a lot of stuff, and they have gotten kind of crazy before, and they'll see a rattlesnake, and you know, eventually they can kill it, you know, kind of circling around and chasing, and they can get bit, but they will eat a rattlesnake. And then other animals that you might not think about, bobcats. Bobcats are very quick, got those sharp claws, sharp teeth. They can reach out and grab a snake by the end of its tail or go after its head and eventually run it down enough to where they can kill and eat a rattlesnake. So coyotes and bobcats so far. Now how about this one? Skunks? Yeah, so skunks will eat small rattlesnakes, little rattlesnakes. They'll eat even a little bit bigger rattlesnakes. They're pretty ferocious fighters. They've got very, very, very sharp teeth. Foxes, they're good at capturing some of the smaller snakes. And then a lot of birds of prey. And you've probably seen this and heard this on National Geographic and shows of the outdoors like that. But I have seen like a hawk sitting on a log out in the middle of the woods. And I'm like shocked in its talons. There's like a snake hanging there. And, the hawk just tearing it apart, you know, with its beak. And then there was one time I literally saw, a hawk, a red-tailed hawk sitting on a big stump out in the woods. And I could tell, yes, I couldn't believe it. It was eating a rattlesnake. Of course, owls. Owls are big birds of prey. And hawks and owls will eat snakes, including rattlesnakes. And then a lot of you know this, a lot of you might not know this. Of course, there are snake-eating snakes. So there are snakes that will actually eat snakes, and these are usually typically non-venomous snakes that are eating non-venomous snakes and venomous snakes. And a big one is the king snakes. So when you see these king snakes, these typically, I mean, they can be different colors, but typically you see this beautiful, beautiful black snake with these white spots and just an absolute beautiful snake, a king snake. Indigo snakes are a big predatory type snake. And cottonmouths will also feed on timber rattlesnakes. So there you go. You got a venomous snake eating a venomous snake. So that's some of the animals that will actually eat on a rattlesnake. Now, don't forget, what about us? What about humans? Humans also kill a lot of timber rattlesnakes every year that they see in the woods. So they see a snake, they kill a snake, right? How many people you've ever heard, like, well, I saw a snake and I chopped its head off with some kind of farm implement tool, a shovel or a spade or what have you. So they see a snake and they'll say any snake is a dead snake. And I hope that anybody listening to this channel today knows that that's just not right. Yeah. If I had a farm, if I had a yard where kids played and you see a rattlesnake, you're going to jump, right? You're probably going to think I need to kill that snake because I got kids that play here. You might consider, if it's an option, and you're going to think I'm silly by saying this, but you might consider maybe relocating the rattlesnake. And there are folks out there that will relocate that rattlesnake for you. Now, you take a chance on calling them up, and the rattlesnake gets away. So I get it. Folks are like, no, I'm not going to do that, Tommy. I'm going to kill this snake because I got kids that live here. I gotcha. So folks will kill snakes in their yards, kill snakes in their woods. They will see a snake. How about this? You ever heard of this? Like folks out in the country or folks driving through the country, they see a snake laying on the road or crossing the road. Now, typically, if they're laying on the road and it's near dark or early in the morning, what they're doing, and you probably know this, right? It's hot and then it's gotten cool at night. And so what do the cold-blooded animals do? They lay on a hot rock. They lay on hot blacktop. They lay on hot concrete. And as they do that, they're warming their bodies so that they can function well. And so as they're doing that, here comes this somebody in a big truck or a car, what have you, and they see that snake and they gun it and they run over the snake. And then what do? That's right. They back the truck right back over it. So they run over it, then they back over it, then they run over it again. They back on it and they spin their tires on it and they make sure that dang snake is deader than a doornail. So yeah, us humans do kill a lot of snakes. The timber rattlesnakes, they're going down in population, and they do. I know naturalists always say this, but they do have a reason for being here. They have a niche, and that niche is to eat a lot of mice, eat a lot of rats, and keep some of those populations or all of those populations under control. So the next time you see a snake, you don't have to kill it. I'm going to tell you another real quick one. Hadn't even thought of this story, but just, oh my goodness, maybe 2 or 3 days ago, I had, I don't like to spray pesticides, but I mixed up some vinegar and I mixed up some Dawn soap and I mixed up some salt. So that combination, you mix it up in a certain combination, you put it in a sprayer and you spray along your edges or weeds or around weed beds and things or, you know, flower beds, and that will kill your weeds. So as I'm doing that right here at the house, I'm over by my rose bush, and as I'm going around the rose bush to kill the weeds, guess what? There's a snake. Just a garter snake, not a big deal. Beautiful, beautiful little garter snake. But I already had the sprayer going, and I sprayed half his body with the vinegar. So, I hated myself. I didn't kill it, but I'm sure that kind of burned a little bit with it being vinegar and salt. And I'm sure he survived, but I felt terrible for hours just doing that. So, you know, we don't have to kill them all. We don't have to chop their heads off. Just snakes are here for a reason. And I'll get off my soapbox. So lastly, folks, you know, how about another story? You know, I want to share like a quick little rattlesnake story with you. And this happened to me as well. So here we go. So when I was at the University of Kentucky studying biology, and I had an upper division herpetology class, and where we studied the reptiles and the amphibians. It is a pretty tough class. Pretty tough class. It was a lot of fun. There were times we would go out to the Red River Gorge and look for snakes. We would look for reptiles. We would come go out there late at night and look around with very, very small lamps looking for amphibians. So we're out there walking through the woods in the dark and around water. But a lot of the times we went to the University of Kentucky and studied the non-venomous snakes. Now, so we're out there in the wild, we're looking for animals, we're looking at the non-venomous snakes at the university, but then, how about this, we studied the venomous snakes at our actual professor's house. Yes, he lived with a ton of venomous snakes. He had at least a couple of very large rooms set up with many, many, many large aquariums and 10-gallon aquariums and 20-gallon and 30-gallon aquariums or terrariums with individual snakes in each glass tank. And I mean a lot of them. I remember he had just all kinds of rattlesnakes. He had eastern diamondbacks and western diamondbacks and timber rattlesnakes and you name it, he had them, you know, so you get the picture, right? So one day, as I was studying these venomous snakes, and I had my face about, I mean, it was close. I want to say 3 to 6 inches from the glass, you know, so my face is right up there next to the glass, and right on the other side of that glass is a Massasauga rattlesnake. Now, folks, I know we're talking about timber rattlesnakes, but bear with me here. We're going to talk about rattlesnakes. So right on the other side of the glass is a Massasauga rattlesnake, and it's sitting there staring at me as I am staring at it. So, you know, I'm sitting there, and I'm watching his behavior, and I'm writing down things about his behavior and drawing distinguishing physical attributes on a notebook, you know, drawing little diagrams and pictures of him to the best of my ability and writing down his behaviors and you know, listening to the professor talk about different snakes, just taking notes, right? And I was really, really locked in on this snake. We were making eye contact and pretty cool. So I was really looking at him and seeing what's so much different about him and a timber rattlesnake, etc. And then, and, you know, he was very locked in on me as well. And then, here we go. All of a sudden, without any movement at all from me, don't blame me, folks, I wasn't moving at all. I was very locked in on this snake. All of a sudden, this rattlesnake, this Massasauga rattlesnake, it struck the glass right at the middle of where my face would be. And I'm telling you, if there weren't any glass there, he would have hit me dead in the middle of the face. So I jumped back very quickly, and I cannot underestimate the words very quickly. And I know you're going to laugh at me, but I know I kind of screamed a bit. as he surprised me as he hit that glass. And I'm telling you, folks, that snake hit that glass so hard, and he was just mere inches from my face. It shocked me, right? And the strike, again, it would have hit me right dead between the eyes. And I'll never, ever forget that moment, and I can see it right this second. Here's the other part. I was quite thankful for the safety of that glass as I watched, two venom trails slowly sliding down the inside of that glass tank. Can you picture that? A snake just struck inches from your face, and now you're focused in on that glass, and you see two trails of snake venom, rattlesnake venom, going right down the inside of that glass. This experience, I'm telling you, it happened 40 years ago, and it was an experience that I have never, ever, ever forgotten. And I can still see that beautiful Massasauga snake staring at me as I watch that potent, thick, liquid venom sliding down the tank glass. That moment, it is burned into my mind, and I always wondered, what if that glass bear had not been there that day? Woo! That would have been a heck of a shock, right? So, folks, we've had a couple of quite informative episodes on a snake that scares a lot of folks, including you, and I'm not going to lie, including me, the timber rattlesnake. You know, folks, I hope I slightly took away some of the scare away, or at least that I helped educate our listeners tonight and a couple of weeks ago just a bit more on this fascinating rattlesnake that definitely plays a huge, large role in our natural habitats, the timber rattlesnake. So if you liked the Amateur Naturalist podcast, if you liked it tonight, if you liked it in the past, we would love for you to subscribe. Give us a rating, please. Please give me a 5 rating. I need it. And leave the podcast a review. Let me know what you think. I sure would love it if tonight, after you listen, you give my podcast a 5-star review. Or do that and tell a couple of friends. Well, folks, thanks for listening tonight to my podcast yet again, another night. And as always, I sincerely appreciate all of you downloading and listening to the Amateur Naturalist Podcast. Good night, everyone. Take care.
Hey, everyone. Tommy Fowler here. Have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? I know I did, and I wasn't for sure exactly how to make a podcast or how to market it. And that is where Buzzsprout came in. Maybe you want a new fun hobby, or you just want to have a new side hustle to make a little bit of money. So far, it's been a super fun hobby to me. Personally, I did a lot of research looking for a podcast host site, and Buzzsprout is hands down the easiest and best way to launch, promote, and even track the success of your own podcast. Hey guys, I only started in mid-August 2022, and already I am listened to in over 100 countries around the world. I am currently listened to on Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, and 18 other popular podcast sites. Now that is what Buzzsprout can help you do as well. Hey, you can start your own podcast with just a smartphone, your earphones, and your stories. You don't need a bunch of fancy equipment to start off. Hey, folks, let me get you started. Go to my podcast show notes. You're going to see my podcast website link and maybe one or two advertiser links. Look for the Buzzsprout link. Now click on that link to go to Buzzsprout, and you are going to get a $20 credit if you sign up today for a paid plan. Plus, it helps me out to keep my podcast on the air, and I might be able to finally update some equipment. By joining today through the link down in my show notes, you're going to get a great-looking podcast website, awesome audio players that you can drop in other websites, and fantastic analytics to see just how you are performing worldwide. Join today. Over 100,000 podcasters and myself already using Buzzsprout, and get your awesome message out to the world. Hey, don't forget, it's totally free to start off with Buzzsprout in the beginning, and it does not cost much to join their first paid plan. And if you join today and you sign up for an inexpensive paid plan by clicking on the link inside of my show notes, you're going to get $20 off, and you'll help me out a little bit at the Amateur Naturalist Podcast. Thanks, folks.